Well, welcome to all of you. Nice to be here with you this evening, and a blessing to see this many people interested in Christian day schools. The assignment that I have tonight is called Shouting for the Battle, and I think I'm going to start with the story to start with, and we'll come back a little later and look at some lessons to be learned. I hope you're willing to take your rose-tinted glasses off tonight. I think sometimes when we look at history, we don't gain much from it if we have really dark lenses or if we have rose-tinted glasses on. We have a tendency to go back in history and say, wow, they really did it right back there, or else we go back and say they did it all wrong. And I find in history that it's more likely to be that if they shouted for the battle like David did, and they were willing to stand up to Goliath like David did, they still had mistakes and failures and very real life. And I think it's more powerful for us if we realize that right to start with. Before we begin, I'd like several verses read, and I'm going to ask some of you to read them for me. So Proverbs 9:10, if one of you would just do that quickly, stand to your feet and read it so everybody can hear. Proverbs 9:10. Second one is going to be Proverbs 22, verse 6, and the third one, Ephesians 6, verse 4. Go ahead when you're ready.
Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding.
Thank you. Proverbs 22, 6.
Proverbs 22, verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it.
And Ephesians 6, 4.
And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Okay, thank you. I chose those verses where it talks about the fear of God, it talks about training children, it talks about nurture. I want you to remember them as we tell the story. It's June of 1970, and the public school term in Stirling, Alberta is coming to a close. Among those in attendance were parents who were part of the Stirling Mennonite Church. These families had been starting to notice some difference in the school. One of the students told me that was a student at the time, said that evolution was beginning to be taught. There was a new curriculum in the school. There were other concerns that they had, but I think evolution being taught in school was something that trickled through a number of the different accounts that I researched. There were also, in that particular school, to be fair with it, there was also some other religion being taught. That community has a large group of another religion, the LDS religion to be exact, and that was trickling into the public school. That's against public school standards, but it was happening because a number of the teachers were a part of that community. In the words of one student that was in grade 7 at the time, the curriculum was different in the last year or two in public school. There were also activities promoted that parents were not comfortable with their children taking part in. There were discussions of what to do. Trips were made to Edmonton, and there was a meeting with the Minister of Education. In the beginning of the new school term in the fall of 1970, the Mennonite children did not go back to the public school. School was organized in the church with Dorothy Walter and Ruth Walter as the first teachers. And it's interesting to me that I saw in the program that someone, there'll be a speaker here that is a son of Dorothy. And this evening we have a daughter of Ruth here in this assembly. So that's just putting a personal touch. Maybe I've missed somebody. Maybe there's some other connections as well. Rottenstaff curriculum was used to begin with. The benches were pushed back in the auditorium, and the teachers shared one desk. Now, one of the things that was happening during this time that I think you should understand is that there also were different personalities. There were people who said, we must have our own school, and we're just going to do it. And there were people that said, how will we do it? Have you ever heard of that difference? There was differences of how to approach, etc. I think that I should name a few names. George Hofer was a man that was very active in wanting to start a school, and I think he had very much a vision to do that. There were others that helped him as well, but I would say that it's fair to say he spearheaded some of the desire to start a school. In the fall, when the students quit coming to the public school, the parents were accused of not sending their children to school, and the local school district required the bus drivers to pull into the families' yards and pick up the students. No children got onto the buses, and one of the bus drivers in particular was a very kind man. He was remembered as one who helped the children. One of the girls had a very bad cut on her leg, and he was very careful and helped her on the bus and was just a very kind-hearted man. And he was one of the ones that had to pull into these farmyards to pick up the children. And he really struggled with that. He actually talked to some of the families and told them that he wished he didn't have to do that. It was either that or when he had to testify in court. One day my mother was shocked to open the door to a knock and find a policeman outside. His purpose was to submit a subpoena for attendance at a court trial. There were a lot of concern and questions. What will we do if we're found truant and are not given the option of having our own school? Were they doing the right thing? There was even talk of taking the children away to some other location. I marvel at some of that as I think about it. And I think in that scene, there were differences of opinion of how to proceed, what to do. One student remembers overhearing parents talk about maybe needing to relocate to British Columbia, where there was more freedom to have public schools in Alberta. The court date was finally set. The parents had asked for more time after the original court date was given, and understood that the purpose of asking for more time is they were seeking to try to meet what the government was asking and to try to find a way to make it work. They were given more time, and the court date was set. I did not search the court records. That's my next project. But I could not find from the memories of the people I talked to what the exact court date was. But I understand it was sometime in late November, early December of 1970. The Crown prosecutor was a Mr. Hartigan. All the parents were in attendance that had been subpoenaed, but none of the children were with them. The children were all in the school, in the church, attending the school. It's interesting. This needs a little bit of a note right now. I was talking to one of the students that was in that school, and they remembered this court date being a very big thing. And they remembered, she said she thought they knelt by their desk. They all had prayer over the time of the court date, or the court time. So they knew the court was in session, and the children and the teachers at school were praying while the parents were in court. After the court began, one of the first things the prosecutor did is called for John Hofer. Now, John Hofer was one of the children that was in school. And no John Hofer came to take the stand. I think his name was John Tim, because there were several Johns there. but John Tim Hofer was called by name. And the prosecutor began to get flustered. And he looked through his papers, began to shuffle through his papers, and he couldn't find what he was looking for. And he even asked the parents if they would go get the children. They said no, and they did not need to. They were not called to court. They did not need to go get them. And they said they wouldn't. There are some stories that there was maybe a little bit of whispering of some saying, don't go. I don't know. There is one story in this account that I remember growing up hearing, and I went and talked to the person that's supposed to have done it, and he said, I never did that. So these are stories that come down word of mouth, and sometimes you have those kind of details. So I'm going to leave that part of it out, the part that he said he didn't do. But nevertheless, they didn't go for the children. And the judge said, you know, he said, Mr. Hartigan, you had all this time. You had extra time to put your case together. And he said, I consider case dismissed. And that was the end of it. That was absolutely the end of the court case. It was the end of everything for them. They were able to have their own school. Now, they had been using rod and staff curriculum, but they were required to have certified teachers. And as a result of that, in January of 1971, they began using correspondence courses. Now, something that is of very much interest to me, I was recently digging in my mom's old file, and I found some letters. And I just want to show you how carefully the Department of Education was watching. 1978. Let me read you a little excerpt from a letter. Dear Mr. Hofer, thank you for your letter of January 10. I got the wrong date here. I have the wrong letter. Just let me back up a little bit. Dear sir, see if I can find the right one here. Grade 8. Attempt to find a more suitable text than God's World, His Story. Sections which appear to teach religious intolerance are to be avoided. They paid that much attention to the curriculum they were using in 1978. The school started in 1970, in 1971. I've got a copy of the Alberta government's requirement for private schools. I remember growing up in that school that it was still a little bit of something when the person from the Department of Education would come visit. I remember that, visiting while we were in school. And I'll leave that some of that till later. I did miss part of the story. I jumped ahead here and I missed part of the story, so I'm going to go back and retell it, the part of the court case. So pardon that omission. So the court was brought to order and witnesses were called to take the stand. Several teachers were called on and showed that the students had been on the roll in the last term but were not in attendance now. The bus driver that was sent to pick up the children was called on and stated that yes, he had stopped at these homes, but no children had gotten on the bus. And then Mr. Hartigan called for one of the children by name, and then I told you the rest of the story there. There was much rejoicing and relief as the parents filed out of the court. One of the men said to Mr. Hartigan, that was providence. And Mr. Hartigan said, providence, nothing. That was stupid, Hartigan. That's the quote that has come down to us from that account. And there was much rejoicing and relief. The children remembered the relief in the homes as the parents unwound and said, ah, there is there's nothing. And I don't know if some of them maybe thought there could even be jail time for this. I'm not sure. I do want to emphasize again, you heard me say it, but there were different personalities in that. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. And I think it's important for us to see that. And I think there's a working together that's a blessing Oftentimes when you have one personality that just goes one way, you have things to pick up behind them. And there was some of that in this new school. It was not a utopia. Having their own school brought a lot of struggle. There was somewhat chaos in the early years of what to teach. And one year, I don't know which year this was, one year one of the students told me they had in that one room, they must not have had a teacher, so they had five different teachers. And at least several of them started all over in a brand new textbook when they started teaching after the next one did. So there's something to be said for having an organized curriculum and sticking with it, whichever one you choose. And so there were some difficulties, and the school was not just given free rein. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit. We told the story for a reason, and I really wish there was, there is a clock. I see it now. So we told the story for a reason. So let's look at this a little bit and consider a few things. It's been 52 years since this court case occurred. If we consider the end of this year, it's been about 52 years. You know, there's a new generation in school. I was not even born when the court case happened. And we're a long ways away from that happening. And you know, have you ever read in your Bible where it says that there another generation rose up and they forgot in the book of Joshua? That can happen, right? I think that's what our interest is tonight, is how do we keep a vision alive? Now, as you think about David and Goliath, I like the devotional we had tonight, the focus on God. Wouldn't you say that David, as he came there and said, this is God's battle. Is there not a cause? And David's words, don't you think the parents in the story I told were saying that? Is there not a cause? I think it's a good example of that. And it represents a vision. And I like that. I like that perspective. I like the thought of David and his words, that he said to Goliath, "But I come to you and the Lord God of Israel, whose armies you have defied." Another thing that I noticed is how much prayer had a part in that happening. How much the parents were praying. How much the children were affected by the praying. And how much prayer had a part in that. Now, I'm going to ask some questions. Is the private Christian school still worth it? Okay? Now, I want you to think with me a little bit. And I want you to put yourself into the shoes of these parents. Now, you do it in your own community, in your own minds. You're somehow involved with a school. You're here for that kind of a reason, with a Christian school. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you to close your eyes when you do what I'm going to ask you to do, because I want you to make the decision for yourself and not be swayed by the people around you. Would you go to the sacrifice and work of saying, we will start our own school now? We need to. It's imperative to have our own Christian school and not send our children to the public education. Would you do that now if it had not happened previously? Would you stand to your feet? You can close your eyes first and then stand to your feet if you would say yes to that question. All right, now you can all open your eyes and stay standing. I want you to look around. So my question for you tonight is this vision still alive? So sometimes we rate a vision on how excited people seem to be about it. In the story that I told, there were people that really pushed that we've got to do this, and there were other people that were a little more to come along and make it happen. They probably didn't look quite as glamorous, but they did have part of the picture and made it happen. You may be seated. But what I want us to see is that I think the vision is alive today. I think it's a true statement that if we stood today and did not have our own Christian day schools, that we would start them. If you look at the path of where public school has gone, from where it was in 1970, there's many more reasons to start your own school today than there was in 1970. So, as we answer the question, I think we should realize that the vision has not been lost. Maybe what we should talk about is how do we keep the energy going in this vision. Because the vision itself has not been lost. We see the importance of it, but maybe it's more a thing of, well, we've got a lot of other work to do, we have a lot of other important things, and maybe school is a little less important. What are you willing to sacrifice for this privilege? Maybe we'll get answers on why there's such a shortage of teachers. Does it have something to do with our willingness to sacrifice as schools? All right, I'm going to ask another question. Would you choose government-funded, certified teachers so that your school could do a better job and not be such a burden in your church community? Okay? I want to be careful how I tell the story, but I have a story to tell. This is not the same school. I'm talking about a different school. I sat recently beside a young man who's a teacher at a new school that had just started. And he told the story of his church community. In that church community, they had gone the route of pursuing certified teachers. He didn't fill me in with all the details, but I understood from the story and from asking somebody else that part of it was they were seeking government funding. And so they went the route of certified teachers. Their idea was that they would get their own people certified, and in that way, they would have their own people as certified teaching in their school. In the interim, they chose to go faster to the goal of certified teachers, and in the interim, they hired other teachers, certified teachers in the school while theirs are getting certified. The unfortunate happening is that their people who went to get certified were lost to the church community. They left. They made their friends there and they left the church community. Meanwhile, the certified teachers that were in the school were taking the school a different direction than what the church community wanted it to go. And they really lost control of the school through that route. As a result, concerned parents started two other small schools that don't have certified teachers. And it was like, I wanted to tell that story because I wanted us to remember, you know, as I look through these old notes, curriculum and certified teachers was one of the things the government kept putting their finger on in those early years. You need certified teachers. You need to have, and to this day, we are required in our enrollment form to make sure it's on there that if a student completes a course of education at this school, they will not get a recognized diploma. And so any grade 12 student that comes out of our school, if they're going to have an Alberta recognized diploma, they have to do a GED. And parents that send their children there are supposed to know that. That's a requirement we have in our class of school in Alberta. And so that's there. Now, without passing judgment on all other paths coming to this, I will say this, that I'm very thankful for two things. I'm thankful that there was vision of not going a certified teacher direction in our school. And I'm thankful that they never took government funding. In recent years, because we are a school that is registered, it was started in 1970, so we're in the education system as an, see, how is that? Registered as an unregistered school. Something like that. It's a little bit confusing. But we're in their system, so we get all the mail, the email and everything. And when there's tests, we hear all about it. And all the different requirements, we hear all about it. And when there's requirements about how you're going to support clubs for children that want a different lifestyle, and etc., that all comes down, and here you need to do this. You need to have this. Well, in the last round in Alberta, when those emails were coming, it became very apparent that the only teeth to that requirement was funding. And I was very grateful that we are not funded by the government. All right, maybe you should put into writing in your schools, we will stay the route of non-certified teachers and non-government funding. Maybe it should be written down somewhere. Think about it. All right, third one. Does it take more vision, a different vision, to start a school or keep one running? Tell me what you think. As I look back at the story, there was a certain hype. There was a certain excitement. We're making this right choice, and God put a check mark on it. And that wasn't quite, that's all fine. But you know, I have my rose-tinted glasses off now. That community has had parents and homes that struggled. It's had difficulty finding teachers. It's had inconsistencies. What else should we talk about? And starting their own school didn't solve all the problems. Now, I want to say after I say that, that I'm also very grateful for a seed of faith that came out of that community. I'm grateful for it. But I think we should understand that it takes a lot of vision to keep a school running. We need to encourage that vision, but let's be willing to recognize that. I am grateful for some of the consistency that has been built in over the years. I'm grateful for curriculum that doesn't change with every teacher. I'm grateful for a desire for teacher support in the school board and community. And I'm grateful for some of those things that are in that community, and I'm grateful for the start of the school, but I'm grateful for a lot of people that were very unsensational but kept the doors open for many, many, many years. And that sometimes is school boards, okay? So I think you should sit up a little straighter, school boards, and take your job seriously and do your job, because you have a wonderful and important place to fill. All right, another question. How does your school pursue excellence? Are you doing the minimum just to get by? So, if in the future we have the government looking over our shoulder very carefully, again, they have not paid a lot of attention, but the last visit we had, I was at the school, and one of the things that the lady was very interested in is what that filing cabinet had in it. It so happened there was CAT tests in it. We do CAT tests every year. And we don't use Alberta tests, we use Canada tests. And the reason for that is Alberta tests are written to Alberta curriculum. We use a broader-based test that tests students' performance, and we file it every year for every student. It's kind of a nuisance. We try to do good record keeping, and that can be a little bit of a nightmare because you have rollover of teachers, right? And you got to keep training people to do record keeping, record keeping, record keeping. But I think when we are inspected by the government and they're coming, one of the things they're going to ask is, are you doing a quality job? And maybe we should take that one out of the way by doing a quality job. So how does your school pursue excellence? Let's have two quick ways that your school is pursuing excellence. Just two of you, real quick. Something that sprang to mind when I listed a few things off. I hope silence doesn't mean that you're not doing it. Yes? 80% passing grade. Okay. Thank you. One other one. Doing achievement tests. Okay. All right. Well, you think about it. I don't think our schools should be substandard. I don't think our goal is to get by with just the minimum. And I think you can turn to your Bibles and get that. Not just because you're scared of the government. All right. We need to move along here. The biblical perspective of the fear of the Lord and godly wisdom forms a much superior educational platform than learning and education without the fear of God. And I don't think we need to be ashamed of that. Science rightly called, not science falsely so called, as the Bible verse says. Creation. Maybe here is something. I love nature. And I think there's so much around us about creation. And I think we should get excited about it and try to transmit that to the students and to realize that God is the creator. It's such a blessing to have, to be able to teach creation in our schools and to turn their eyes to God's. The biblical understanding, number 7, the biblical understanding of love and impartiality, if followed, is far superior to some kind of social activism. It's becoming very popular to say, we believe that every person matters. Well, Jesus said that a long time ago. And I think we should say what Jesus said. And we really should have been and be saying it all along. Not just when society says everybody matters. There's, of course, a lot of perversion with some of those kinds of things get twisted as well, and we want to stay on the side of biblical perspective. In the area of excellence, and I think we're going to hear something about this, but I just have a question. What are we doing about being careful about our staff? I think I'm so thankful for our young people teaching in our schools, etc. But we do need to be careful. They're in the care of children, and we need to be careful that they are trustworthy people that are in the care of children. And if you hear of warning signs, you shouldn't just ignore them. That's not wisdom. All right, I think maybe that's enough on that. I wanted to mention another school in Alberta. 1978, a Holderman school was also taken to court in Linden, Alberta, and they also were able to have their own school. That's a little bit after. So actually, the school at Stirling was the first school, private Christian school that started in the province of Alberta. And several years later, a Holderman school started in not too far from the city of Calgary. Here is their mission statement. It's short. We have a mission statement too, but I like the way theirs is written up. It's just nice and short. And so I pulled it off of their website, and I'm going to read it here. Our mission is to provide a Christ-centered quality education and to work with the home and the church to nurture our students' intellectual, spiritual, social, and emotional growth to prepare them for responsible service in the kingdom of God. Our vision is an atmosphere where all children feel loved, respected, and encouraged to develop to their fullest potential and to instill in them a respect for the core values of honesty, loyalty, perseverance, and compassion. That's a nice little vision statement. And you don't need to copy theirs, but maybe we should have a vision statement in what our school is about. So, in summary, I believe it took a vision for the beginning of the Christian school. And I had wanted to say here that I would have loved to have found out how many of you come out of some Christian school that started sometime. I'm not going to take the time, but it'd be nice to know that. And your story is not from Stirling, Alberta necessarily, but it probably comes out of a school that was started somewhere and may have gone through some wrestling as well. It took a vision to begin that. I believe the vision is alive today. And it might look a little different, but if it faced the same battle, I believe there are visionaries who would stand up and say, we need to be responsible for the schooling of our own children. And we need to have a biblical worldview taught in school. There are areas that we can shore up as schools. School boards need vision to grow. We can learn from history. Maybe we should take out the old stories and listen to them and retell them. On the way down here today, I chose to call several of my siblings and just ask them, what was it like when the school started? What grade were you in? What was it like? What did you experience? What emotions did you go through? What was the switch like? Did you like it? Didn't you like it? That was a very fun experience. And it was very worthwhile. We can learn from history. Now, can you reiterate the vision for your school and your school board? Could you say it? You don't need to tonight, but you should think about it. God bless you.